Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday to you.
Happy Sunday from
Den and Lowe.
Got that gravelly, sexy voice on tonight, Denbo.
Oh, I've been listening to the radio.
Denbo, I've got a surprise for you.
You do? What is it?
Yeah, close your eyes.
Okay.
But put your hand out so you can hold this.
Okay.
Okay, hold that phone and hold it up to up.
Okay.
Okay, close your eyes.
Okay, don't yell. I'm right here. For
Get
God's
excited.
Sakes.
What is this the sound of? What is that, Denbo?
I had Werner's. Oh, your buble.
This is LaCroix. It's Pamplemousse LaCroix.
Your favorite?
My favorite. I love Pamplemousse.
Well, you're my favorite, so.
You know what I like saying? I like saying this word, Pamplemousse.
Do you?
Yeah. It's French for grapefruit.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad you enjoy it.
It's so yummy.
It sounds like the episode of Saturday Night Live where they were doing Schvetti balls.
It does?
Yeah, you're,
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Yeah. It was one of the funniest skits ever.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I just had one of my favorite pizzas.
Yes. The combination that you love.
The combination I love is light cheese. Like just a sprinkle. And then hamburger. And onions. And then obviously the best pizza sauce in town.
And where is that from?
Main Street Pizza.
So you mentioned earlier this evening that you used to order it a certain way. Mm-hmm. Remind me, what way was that?
Well, I used to call them up and tell them, take a small pizza dough pizza. Take the small dough for pizza. Roll it out to the medium size.
Okay.
And then put on the sauce and the light cheese and then the hamburger and the onion.
So you like the crust thinner?
I definitely like a thin crust pizza.
I do too.
I didn't order it that way tonight, so it came with just the regular small size. It has a little bit of a thicker crust, which I don't really like. But it would the crust is fine if it could just be thinner. But it's not as good as the crust at Big Laura, which I consider to be, I always refer to it as a water crust.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why you call it a water crust, but it's water and flour that has had a chance to rise over time so that they can throw it in a 900 degree oven for 9 minutes and voila, there's your
pizza.
I
call it a water crust because it tastes like water and flour. It's more like a cracker crust when it's, you know, grilled or cooked at that high temperature. But there's a new pizza in town that we have to try.
And what is that?
We have to try the pizza at Boro.
Oh.
I keep talking about Boro and Dick's Boro House, but we've discovered they have a pizza oven and they have a pizza recipe. Their chef, Max Sussman, is known for fermented pizza crust. He ferments the pizza crust for 2 days before they make it, you know, bake it. Into a pizza of your choice.
Well, we're going to have to try it.
Doesn't that sound kind of good?
Oh, yeah. I've always appreciated sourdough breads and sourdough pizza dough. Sounds yummy. I'm not sure that it's exactly the same if he's fermenting, but there's a natural action of the yeast fermenting in the crust to make it rise and so I'm kind of anxious to try it, but I do...
Something's going on there with the fermenting.
Yes.
I don't know how it works either, but we'll find out.
Well, it's all chemistry, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Reference to cracker crust is kind of interesting because there's a style of pizza in Chicago that was called cracker crust that came out thin and cracker-like. I didn't care for it.
Oh.
There was a restaurant, I'm struggling to remember, I think it might have been called Rosati's, that had a thinner crust They called it cracker style, but it wasn't like a cracker. It was just really thin. But there was a place down in Roselle that had advertised a cracker crust and tried that. And it was, I mean, it was edible, but it was edible because of the cheese. And the cracker couldn't support the weight of the cheese and the topping. So I didn't care for their style. But their other normal crust was good.
I don't like a lot of cheese. I could actually have pizza with no cheese.
Well, I like it with a little cheese. It doesn't have to have a lot. But you know, the Detroit-style pizza is loaded with cheese that crisps around the edges.
On the outside of the crust.
Yeah.
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 Well, that's a different thing when it's cooked like that. It's not really like cheese anymore.
Well, it's what I consider the prime cut of cheese is when it has gotten that kind of crusty, chewy texture to it.
Well, they actually put the cheese in the pan before they put the dough in the pan.
Really?
Yeah, and that's how you get that cheesy crust.
Interesting.
It's actually baked in from the bottom or the sides, yeah. Oh, well, my gosh, that Detroit style, well, you know, I just call a spade is Buddy's is the best.
I really love Buddy's, especially the Sicilian.
I like any pizza from Buddy's. It could just be just crust and sauce, and I would be happy.
Well, there's a certain simplicity to pizza that, you know, if you have the right crust, you have the right sauce, you have just a little touch of some topping, whether it's cheese or something else. You know, I always used to think of leftover pizza crust with a cup of hot coffee as the breakfast of champions.
Crust is always good, except when it's crust like on your ears or your face or something like that. But yeah, other than that, crust is always good.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's bread or scones or pizza or paella or whatever, that crust, there's just something about crust.
Yes.
Pie crust.
The texture is, I think, what makes it.
It's the flakiness of crust. Crust is always good.
Yeah.
Except in forms of human skin. Then it's not so good. Crusty, like when you say somebody's crusty or they have crust.
A crusty old fart.
A crusty old fart. I don't know what a crusty old fart sounds like, but.
Well, I was
thinking I'm fortunate that you are not that way.
Well, I was thinking of it as a descriptor for an old cranky person.
Yeah.
But back on the subject of pizza, there's legendary Detroit-style pizza and a Chicago-style pizza.
And they're so different.
And they are quite different, even though they can be thick. But the double-crust Chicago-style pizza, I heard described to me over many years, you know, we have pizza with crust on the bottom and crust on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that's like a calzone. And they said, no, this is different. When you live in Chicago, you've got to really try the double crust pizza. And I forget the name, some lady's name out in the west suburbs where I lived had what was called the true double crust Chicago pizza. So one night had to order it. And it's the only pizza in the world where I could only eat one slice.
Oh, yeah, because it's just loaded between the layers of crust.
It just was too much. And I didn't like it. And I tried a second slice just because I said, I can't believe there's pizza that I've eaten a slice and I don't like it. Maybe I should just have another wedge. And so I tried another piece, and I could take just a couple of bites. I said, no, it's the same thing. I don't like this.
I had it once, too, in Chicago, and I didn't care for it either. It was like, I don't know what it was, weird. I liked the crusty edge.
Yeah.
Where the two pieces of dough came together, but I didn't like the fact that there was two layers of crust.
Yeah.
You know?
It just was weird.
It was weird.
Yeah. So
and it was so deep you can't eat it with your hands, and I like to take a big piece of pizza, fold it in half, and eat it like a taco.
Yeah.
So I don't like it with that Chicago style. You have to eat it with a fork and a knife.
Yeah.
You cannot pick it up and eat it with your hands, and I think probably that's one of the things that makes me not care for it. It's more like a, lasagna is not the right word, but it's more like a, I'm going to say like a pot pie almost, like an Italian pot pie or something, even though it's got sauce and cheese on the top of the second layer. But
well, a lot of people argue about which one of the pizzas in Chicago is the best. There's Pizzeria Uno and Pizzeria Due. There's Giordano's. Lou Malnati's was, I think, probably my favorite because I ate the most of them. They were close to me when I lived out in suburban Chicago, out in Schaumburg, and really close to the center of Schaumburg was Lou Malnati's, and I loved their pizzas of one sort or another. They had something that was similar to the Detroit-style pizza, but they called it a butter crust, and they had butter incorporated in the crust.
Probably they laid it into a pan of butter.
It could be, but it was really good. And but ultimately, over time, I got experimental and decided to try something there besides pizza and found that Lou Malnati's had the best spaghetti and meatballs.
I don't like spaghetti and meatballs. Oh, I mean, it's not something I would ever... It's nothing I would ever order in a restaurant.
Well, I got into the habit. They also had a great salad and great Thousand Island dressing. So when I went to Chicago, after moving back to Michigan, I would bring home frozen meatballs and a quart of their homemade dressing and enjoy that, you know, at some special occasion when I got home. But
like what?
Like Saturday night dinner, other than pizza.
Like just eating it, just having it to eat.
Yeah, it was a special thing. And, you know, you could have the whatever noodles you preferred. But the...
What kind of noodles do you like besides paschetti noodle?
Paschetti?
Paschetti.
I like spaghettini. That was probably my favorite.
Is that like the real thin? The spaghettini
it's, is... The one
not
size
like angel
down,
hair, but one size down from
it's
spaghetti.
Between
I like
angel
spaghettini
hair
too.
And spaghetti.
Yeah. But I love the orecchiette.
Oh, yeah. I love that too.
That's like, it's supposed to be like what? An elephant ear or something
it's
like
just
that?
Just like an ear.
Oh, like an
just
ear.
Like an
not
ear.
Like an elephant ear, but like an ear.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I do like elephant ears. Just
I
for
do,
the
too.
Because of carny food. I love carny food.
Yeah,
so.
You and me both.
But anyways, yeah, the orecchiette, there's just something about the shape of that pasta. It just grabs the right amount of sauce. And, you know, pasta and sauce have to be paired correctly.
Yes.
You have to have the right kind of pasta and the right kind of sauce because the pasta grabs the sauce and holds on to the sauce. And if you have the wrong sauce with a certain type of pasta, it's like too much sauce. It's too much pasta to sauce ratio.
Yeah.
So it's super important that you know your pastas and you know what sauces go with which pasta styles.
Yeah. It's... At Lou Malnati's in later years, as I would visit to teach leadership or management to new managers in downtown Chicago at the AT&T Training Center, I was able to get to Lou Malnati's after the training day was done. And, you know, I would be there for a week at a time, and I would cut through the merchandise mart from the training center. And at the corner of the merchandise mart, I'd drop down to the street level and go a half a block to Lou Malnati's and have dinner. And every night it was the same order, a child's order of spaghetti with meat sauce.
I remember this.
Three meatballs, and they're reasonable size, they're not the giant meatballs.
I remember because you would tell me every night and, when you got back to your hotel room, and I would say, have, what'd you do for dinner? I went to Lou Malnati's.
And I'd have a salad with Thousand Island dressing. Yeah. Hold the onions. So
you had the same thing every night for the four nights you were there.
Yep. Actually, no, for three nights I was there. On the first night
you
I was
so
there.
So funny.
On the first night I was there, I would eat the other half of my Zingerman's sandwich.
No, you ate that on the train.
No, honey, I ate buddy. Half of it on the train. As soon as we left the station, I would start eating one half. I'd save the other half for when I got to my hotel room.
That's gross, Denbo. That's like a four-hour train trip. That's all right. No, it's not all right.
It was delicious.
You can't have...
It was cold going in the bag and room temperature
cone. No, that wasn't cold going in the bag. They made their sandwiches hot.
It was delicious.
Their corned beef was hot on rye.
So then...
And then you would eat it. So basically you would eat half of it and then you would take the other... Because you told me you ate half in the restaurant, took the other half on the train. Because I dropped you off at Zingerman's and you would walk to the train station.
Yeah, well, so I was trying to tell a story when you got off on this tangent about how cold is the
sandwich.
Because
I want to be on tangents, Denbo. I want to ride the wave of tangents.
Yeah, well, you're good at it.
You're trying to make us stay on one thing.
Well, I'm just trying to finish what...
There's no flow. Where's the flow?
Sunday night was the sandwich half that I brought with me.
Okay, fine.
So it would be Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night. Oh, I guess it was four nights.
I know it was, because sometimes you'd go in on a Sunday. You'd go on a Sunday, you'd come home on a Thursday afternoon or Friday.
Come home on Friday.
Yeah, I remember I took you.
On Friday, after the class was over, I would have my dinner at the... seafood restaurant inside the... What are you doing?
I'm picking you.
Well, don't. So I'd have a seafood dinner at a crab place. I'd have a nice bisque with pieces of crab or lobster in it and something seafood. And then I would get on the train and come on home. So
I remember that. I remember that. I remember you eating all these wonderful foods in Chicago.
Well, the high point was the spaghetti with meat sauce and that salad at Lou Malnati's. Once in a while, somebody in the class would invite me to go out to dinner with them, and I always took it as a kind of an honor that they would invite me to spend time with me after spending all day with me in the classroom.
But don't you think the teacher shouldn't go out with the student?
Well, we were trying to teach them to interact on a professional level. And honestly, the old AT&T Bell system model was you had to be on stage as a professional manager on the job and off the job. We were taught how to eat with a fork, how to dine out, how to not salt our food until we tasted it.
Wow. Do you follow that rule today?
I sometimes.
I was going to say, I know you
how
don't.
How to back into
you
every
grab
parking
for the
space.
Salt. You grab for the salt all the time.
Well.
You're like, I have to salt this, even before you've tried it.
Sometimes experience tells me that it's not salted and needs it, but I do prefer to taste it before I salt
it. So they
it.
Basically sent you to charm school is what you're saying.
That's
managed.
What it was called.
It was almost like a finishing school
it's
for a manager.
That's what it was called.
Yeah. Well, they had similar programs at other corporations
sure.
as well. They wanted to take the managers and kind of refine them a bit so that they could go to the, you know, basically, you know, go anywhere.
So did you ever go to one of those?
I didn't have to because I was raised with etiquette.
Oh, okay.
We had a lot of etiquette growing up. Okay. Not only in Girl Scouts. In Girl Scouts, my mother taught the etiquette badge.
Oh, really?
So we got it there. Plus, we had an Emily Post book at home.
Okay.
So, and we did a lot of like, you know, in high school and in college and stuff, I would have dinner parties and stuff at my parents' house. And so I would bring friends over that probably didn't have that kind of upbringing of having, you know, the fork and the salad fork and the entree fork on the left and the dessert spoon and fork at the top of the plate and the knife on the right with the soup spoon and et cetera. So, but I always liked having parties like that because it's a good way. And I did that with Joseph with high school in his high school years. Once a year, he would have a party or a dinner party with his friends, and everybody could bring a friend, and bring a friend could bring a date or bring another friend. And so that kind of, you know, was my way of passing down those etiquette things, especially when it comes to sharing meals together. But I do like it when you go to places where it's very informal as well. But, you know, good manners never go out of style.
So true. And you are renowned for organizing and facilitating great parties.
Well, one of the things I did when you and I got together was I wanted to have a big party. I can't remember if it was probably for one of my birthdays, but I got out the, and I know I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but I got out the Naval Academy's handbook for officers.
Well, I thought it was the Air Force.
I don't know. Maybe it was. I thought it was Naval Academy. Maybe it was Air Force. But anyhow, it taught you how to seat people who are married versus people who are dating. Mm-hmm. And if you're married, you sit opposite, like if I'm on the northeast,
I would be on corner, the southwest.
You would be on the southwest corner, yes. And whatever. And then if you are dating or you're not married, then you are seated next to each other. So I tried to follow those types of rules because I think at the end of the day, it's about making people feel comfortable. And married couples don't need to sit next to each other or directly across from each other at dinner parties because they're married and they're talking to each other all the time. And it makes for more interesting conversation when you can kind of mix it up and mingle a bit.
Well, and I think the first rule of etiquette at any kind of gathering that you're the host of is to make sure your guests feel comfortable.
Right.
And that no one feels uncomfortable if you can help them feel comfortable.
Exactly.
They want to feel welcome and they should feel welcome when you're the host.
Absolutely. Very, very true.
So it's good to be considerate of those things. I was impressed by many things about you when I first met you and your ability to throw a party and even make it for yourself without having to do all the work was one of the many things I admired about you.
And we've had some fun dinner parties over the years.
Yeah.
And the last one we had was in March of 2020. So we're due for another one and I'm ready to book one.
Oh, sounds wonderful.
I'd like to have some type of a dinner party.
Sounds
so
wonderful.
We got to put our heads together and decide.
Could we have hamburgers?
Who, and what, where, and when?
Could we have hamburgers and corn on the cob? And
well, that sounds like a picnic or a barbecue.
Isn't that what we wanted for our wedding dinner?
Well, that's what I wanted, but you went behind my back and wanted to upgrade it to New York strip steaks and some other bull crap that I didn't want. No, I just wanted barbecued ribs and chicken and make it simple. So, but you went behind me.
So isn't that something we've already talked?
I should have known that day that you would go behind my back on stuff.
So isn't this a repeat topic?
I love repeat topics.
Oh, okay. I know you are a nag in that respect.
No, I'm just joking with you, Denbo.
Well,
I don't want to go down that road again.
Yes,
however,
let's not.
You know, it is how it is.
Yeah.
It is what it is. But I'm ready to have a dinner party, but I don't want it to be hamburgers and corn on the cob. That, to me, is not a dinner party.
Well, we did have a really wonderful meal this week, thanks to some lovely people in our lives. They gave us a gift certificate to one of our favorite places.
Oh, yeah.
We had our favorite meals. We've had, in the past, when I was going in for some surgery, it was where I said, well, if I'm going in for surgery, this could be my last meal. So I want to make sure it's what I really like.
Yeah.
So they got us a gift certificate at that place. And
our niece and nephew got us a gift certificate at La Bisteca in Plymouth. And Dennis, it is the only place for five states where you can get Piedmontese beef.
Yeah.
Which is very specialized and delicious.
Which reminds me, there's a little snig of your steak left. I've got to eat that tomorrow.
I couldn't eat
breakfast.
It all because it's too much. I got a New York strip.
Yeah.
And I like it medium rare. And yeah, I only ate like a half of it or just under a half of it. I was thought you would have it the next day with eggs. I thought you would have it with eggs yesterday morning.
I should have.
Well, what are you going to do with it now?
I'm going to have it for breakfast tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Because it's only good for 3 days after it's cooked.
It's tomorrow. It's got to go.
Yep.
I'm going to make sure I make it go.
Mm-hmm. Well, darling, as usual, you're always hilarious to talk to and always funny. So guess what's going on the TV right now?
Some kind of country music television awards?
The CMT Awards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know much about country music, but I thought it might be fun for us to watch it and get up to speed on some of these younger acts and
yeah, there's things several that are names.
More popular, because we're not really, you know, dyed-in-the-wool country music fans. I think we enjoy listening to all kinds of music, but watching an award show like that will help us kind of get up to speed.
Yeah. And, you know, some of the younger members of our family like country music. There's probably a few that don't like it, but...
Well, if I had my choice between listening to rock and roll or country music, I'd pick rock and roll or rock. Maybe not even rock and roll, because that's kind of like 50s, 60s type stuff. But I would definitely like, I prefer rock. But country can be like rock. I mean, to me, they are kind of similar.
Well, the Beatles had a huge country influence. Oh, my gosh,
the Beatles. Yeah, there's never an episode without you mentioning the Beatles.
Well,
but I was thinking back to that documentary that we watched yesterday about Joan Jett.
Oh, I know.
Who, to me, is the original girl rocker.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean? And so she's just like, I know the Beatles cite another woman as their main influence, right?
There Brenda was, Lee.
Yeah.
They said Brenda Lee was invented the rock and roll.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, she was an early influence, and Brenda Lee was country, but
I'm not sure I would put her in the same genre as a Joan Jett. And I would encourage everybody to watch the Joan Jett documentary. It's called Bad Reputation.
Yeah.
Find it. It is so good.
Excellent.
It is excellent. And I mean, that woman is committed to her art, and it's just, she's amazing. And the things that she had to put up with.
Oh, yeah.
And her bandmates when they were in the Runaways, when they first started out, you know, yeah. And how she got on the scene when she was 16 years old. I mean, it's just a really great story, and how she's still going strong today.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the best documentaries I've ever seen.
Yeah, so big respect. I always liked Joan Jett.
I did too.
Like, people talk about Pat Benatar, but quite frankly, I would take Joan Jett over Pat Benatar.
There's nothing shabby about Pat Benatar.
No. I know.
The disrespect, though, that Joan Jett got, and I've got to say, I Love Rock and Roll is an anthem that everybody that likes rock and roll's head is bobbing to when that song is on.
Her version of it.
Absolutely.
Because she didn't write it. They did a remake of somebody else's version.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, a lot of these tunes that different artists perform is done by somebody else, and they're just covering some great song in their own style.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know you make fun of me for mentioning the Beatles, but the...
I do.
The occasion... Cameron
you're
and
like
I,
the Beatle dude.
Cameron and I were building a deer blind in the barn up north, and as he's playing this music, I said, you know, that's an old Beatles song. He said, really? I said, yeah, the Beatles started out playing country. They played Carl Perkins and Buck Owens. And I said, one of the first hits for the Beatles that was direct from a song that had been played on country music just before they did it was Buck Owens. And
what was the name of the song, honey? Do you remember?
Sure. Yeah, embarrassing.
You can't think of it?
Yeah, you're right.
You can't think of the song that Buck Owens did?
And Ringo sang for the Beatles.
I don't, well, don't look at me because I sure as hell don't know.
They're going to put me in the movies. They're going to make a big star out of me. And all I gotta do is act naturally.
Oh, act naturally.
Yeah.
So that's the name of the song.
Yeah.
Well, then you got to it. That's good, honey.
Yeah. It took me a moment.
I know.
10 o'clock at night or something like that.
No, it's not 10 o'clock at night. It's just called, we can't, at our ages, we know so much. There's only so many things we can have for quick recall in our short term. Right? I mean, like, we've got all this stuff in our short-term memory. Then we've got all this stuff stored in the long-term memory. And we have so much knowledge that we can't recall it as quickly. That's all it is. But we can think of it because you know what typically happens? The minute we
stop thinking about it and go do something,
it just comes right to our head because it's like a database that's churning. And you know these, you know how data is stored all over the world. It might have to go to a data center over in, you know, someplace in the east, and then come back to us, and it takes a while. So, the CPU, the processing time, takes longer. Yeah.
The cognitive processing unit.
Yeah, but I don't think when you're younger and these kids recall all this stuff when they're younger, they don't have as much life experience and things to remember that we do at our ages.
Yeah, yeah. There's not only learning that goes on, but storage. One of the things I was discussing with somebody earlier this week while I was getting some physical therapy is how one of the last functions that people retain as they age, as they have this closing in, when they get to the stage where they're under long-term care and they stop communicating, the playing of music from their teenage years and early adulthood will stimulate their thinking again to start communicating. And it's really quite remarkable how this was discovered and how it actually works. So one of the things that people who really care about those who are in facilities where they've stopped communicating, where they're kind of drawn into themselves, is to start playing music and
from their youth. Well, and there is something too also about music, and that is musical ability. Is you can learn to play music your entire life. It doesn't matter if you're 9 or 90, you can learn to play music.
So I still have
the ability to play music doesn't go away with age like some other skills do.
So I still have a career as a
piano lessons. You could take drum lessons. You could still take music lessons.
So I could still have a career as a blistering guitar player.
If you put your mind to it, you could. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
I took guitar lessons for a while.
So how did you like it?
From a guy named Kevin Gozier in DeWitt, Michigan.
Really?
I was in 7th and 8th grade. His sister was in my class, Patty. You know, he was like a phenom. So taking lessons from him, I'm sure for him to teach me was very basic. But I already knew how to read music because I'd had, you know, piano lessons for years already. So, but I never felt like I had the gift of music. You know what I'm saying? So I think when you don't feel like you've got the gift of music, you're playing the notes, but something's lacking. So I really admire people that have the gift of music. And of course, I love all kinds of music, except fusion jazz. There's just something about fusion I just can't take. And some electronic music I can't take either. It just depends on what it is. But I'm open to listening to anything once. But there are some things I'll say, I don't need to listen to that again.
Well, the topic of musical styles was part of a discussion I had a week ago Friday at the conference over in Lansing. And I don't know exactly how the group of people got on the topic, but I related that my parents had introduced us to all kinds of music, not only the American standards. They bought some Reader's Digest albums, you know, with a variety of songs on it. But my dad used to do work at the radio station up at St. Helens, Michigan, where they had a certain variety of music. Depending on the hour of the day, they had a little something for everybody. And my dad would bring home these albums and 45s.
I know you've told me that story. It included soul music and Motown and funk and all these different genres.
Well, this was before funk was invented, but it had soul music and gospel. Sure. It even had African tribal music on one particular album, which was one of my favorites because it had bare-breasted natives on the cover.
Dumbo, you and National Geographic.
Yeah, well, I know. But the thing that I mentioned that was also influential is when we went to Flint to visit my grandparents, we had the same radio station on that we listened to during the daylight up at West Branch. And we would hear gospel music on the way to church. After church, it would be mariachi or polka. And the difference between the mariachi or the Mexican music.
Not that much different.
There's not that much difference.
No, I know.
And then on the way home to West Branch from Flint, we would hear rock and roll again.
Mm-hmm.
Oldies. You know, not that old then, but it seemed like it was old at the time.
You know, one of the interesting things we learned when we were going to the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, we were subscribers for years. We stopped with the pandemic. But one of the things that we learned from Leonard Slatkin, one of the previous conductor, he gave a lesson one time. He talked about there's little hairs inside our ears, and as we age, we lose those hairs. And therefore, more modern music, more modern orchestral music actually becomes, that is dissonant, actually becomes more appealing to people who are older because we're missing these little hairs, and dissonant music can actually be more appealing to us than it can be to younger people. So there's actually a physiological reason why sometimes when these new works come out, how people are tripped out. Like people used to be, I remember when Philip Glass came out, I mean, with a new work, like, you know, 35 or 40 years ago, and people were completely freaked out. And then when you hear a Philip Glass tune today, it's like, oh, that sounds great. But at the time, people were tripped out by it. And we listened to some new commissioned works when we were going to the DSO, and we would be like, wow, this is wild and it's weird. I don't know if I like it or not. But in 50 years or 40 years, we're going to, you know, people are going to think that that was really great classical music too. And then, you know, so just it's about what you hear and how you hear it.
Yeah.
And it's very personal what people like. It's very subjective.
Oh,
but
it is.
There's actually scientific evidence that older people are less bothered by dissonant works.
That's interesting.
Of music, because we lose these little hairs that are deep in our ears that affect our hearing.
So I've discovered a new artist that has a certain aura about his singing. And there is a woman who sings with him, and I don't know her name yet, but his name, I highly recommend, if you get a chance to listen to this guy, Steven Sanchez. He has that kind of characteristic about his musical delivery that is like Roy Orbison, not quite as dramatic, a little more subtle. And the lady that is singing with him has a little bit of Patsy Cline. And that song that they perform that's on the radio frequently when I'm in physical therapy is really something to listen to.
I'll have to check it out, Denbo.
Yeah, it's really good. His voice is really clear.
I'll have to check it out for sure.
Highly recommended. If we have 3 or 4 listeners to this podcast, go check
it out. We can listen to it right now if we want on Spotify.
That's right.
Well, dear, thank you for another wonderful weekend together.
Thank you. We had a little fun along the way.
A little.
Yeah.
A little.
Yeah, and we didn't have to
More fun to come.
We didn't. Oh, good. I like it when you talk dirty. But we didn't have to go anywhere.
No, we had a nice, quiet weekend at home because I feel like, and I love going away from home. I'm not a homebody, as I explained to you this morning. We were talking about what to do with our side yard.
Yeah.
And getting a designer out here to take a look at it. I am not a homebody, so I like to be away, but actually it is nice to have nothing to do and just be home for a couple days. So
yeah.
So it was good.
Although we did spend a little time watching basketball.
Well, I can't miss the Final Four, honey. And tomorrow night, I will be watching the basketball finals between UConn and San Diego State.
Yeah,
because I love sports.
That game with San Diego State was awesome.
With Florida Atlantic University.
Yeah,
it was a great game.
It was close.
Yeah, it was fun. All right, darling. Well, then I will chat with you soon.
I can hardly wait.
Okay.
I love you.
I love you.